Welcome to the BeZen Wellness Podcast, where we journey through personal stories of transformation and resilience.
This is a space for us to share insights from our experiences and the wisdom of the experts and mentors who have guided us.
I'm your host, Jonah Boersma, certified life and relationship coach.
And I'm your host, Brittany Boersma, registered yoga teacher, breathwork facilitator, and ceremonialist.
If you're enthusiastic about personal development, you're in the right place.
Let's dig in. Welcome, dear hearts. I love to begin with taking a deep collective breath, deep breath into our bellies. Take an inhale through the nose into your belly. And sigh it all the way. As we drop in together today, yeah. I'm so grateful to be here with you, babe.
Me too. I am very grateful to be here with you. In this beautiful space together with our pups.
Yeah, we got Delilah in the background. You can't see her. And we got Newman here. You might hear him licking if you're just listening in. Today's episode, we just wanted to come for a one-on-one together to share about what we've been embarking on. And also, it's the season finale.
Yes, it is. And what an epic season it's been so far.
We've had amazing guidance. We've had an incredible team. And then all of the guests, I just have been so appreciative because we've gotten to have some of our dream guests on this first season.
It's true. It's really funny because when we've talked about podcasting for a long time, and I even remember like before the pandemic, like before 2020, us having discussion about having a podcast. And the way I envisioned it for the longest time was like, oh yeah, we'll just like, it'll be so easy. We'll record on our iPhones. I never really anticipated that it would be this beautiful setup with really high quality equipment. And I definitely didn't anticipate we would be seeing you guys on video here or anyone would be seeing us on video. And so this has really just turned into something bigger and just way better than I had ever really imagined when we had these initial talks about podcasting years ago.
It's been a really supportive journey in podcasting, especially in the last, it's been about 4 months that we have been recording this season. Is that right?
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, we've taken our time with it.
We've actually recorded most of our episodes while I've been pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to touch in on this pregnancy journey because boy, bless the mother, bless everyone who goes through this journey because it has been way more challenging than I expected. And I was just looking back. I keep a daily journal that really is so wonderful. It's called One Line a Day. And I've actually been recording each day for the last 10 years of our lives.
That is so wild. It's been that long.
But I was just going through the one line a day yesterday and looking at, okay, what did our IVF egg retrieval journey look like? And holy shit. Like, I went through a double mastectomy September 28th, 2021. Mm-hmm. We spent 2 weeks recovering in California and we got back home to Oregon. And the next day of us being home and getting settled in, I was on the line with the IVF clinic. And so through the breast cancer process, you and I got in touch through a surgical oncologist up in Portland. She's the one that referred us to the IVF clinic in Portland.
Thank goodness.
Right.
For Dr. Johnson.
Bless Dr. Johnson. Yeah, she's amazing. And I was thrilled too, because our home base is in Eugene. And she referred us to the Portland Clinic. And that Portland Clinic, Oregon Reproductive Medicine, is world-renowned. Mm-hmm. And they have people that travel all over the world to do their egg retrievals, embryo creation, and the whole IVF journey. So we really landed in the right hands.
Well, and that time was also just such a whirlwind. Like, I'll never forget when we received your breast cancer diagnosis. And our naturopath, Dr. Kelly, had called you just like minutes after we received the phone call. She got the facts and she had said, get ready for the washing machine of the medical system. And she was so spot on. Like, it was such an intense time for us because there were a lot of decisions to be made for you and your body and your health, and just so much research that we were doing. We had so many phone calls with different doctors, with different surgical oncologists, looking at so many different options. And so with that, like, it really absorbed a lot of our energy and our emotional energy. I don't think either one of us really had projected into what egg retrieval was actually going to be like, because we were so focused on your decision to have the mastectomy, the mm-hmm. double mastectomy with reconstructive surgery, and what that process was going to be like, and what that procedure would look like, and the healing process. And like you said, like, it hadn't really occurred to us that our fertility might be in question as a result of potential medications or potential procedures, depending on what, you know, the outcome from your surgery was going to look like.
Yeah. During the surgery, they take analyses of the cancer cells, and then they run it through a testing, and it's called an oncotype test. There's different types of tests, but I think we had done the oncotype test, yeah. and it determines whether or not you would be a candidate for chemotherapy. I really didn't believe that I would have to do chemo, just from, you know, how soon we had caught it, and the different advice I was getting from doctors. But that was also on the table. And I just remember getting that call saying that I didn't need to go through chemo. And I was like, so relieved.
What a relief.
Yeah. Because chemo really does play a big role in fertility. Mm-hmm. But one thing that was suggested was a medication called tamoxifen. It's a hormone blocking medication. And it's based on the type of breast cancer. And there's so many different types of breast cancer. I think that's important for people to know. It's not a blanket term. But I kept saying, well, if I'm getting my eggs retrieved, then you need to get your sperm looked at, because it's way more involved to get the eggs retrieved.
Yes, it is. What an uncomfortable situation to put myself in for those
not
of you.
Not as uncomfortable as the woman going through
well,
it.
Well, it was
say.
Like not physically uncomfortable, just like an embarrassing uncomfortable. So when you go in for a semen analysis, you go into the fertility clinic and a nurse sends you into a room where there may or may not be some pornographic magazines or videos playing, and they give you a little cup and you are expected to ejaculate in that cup and put it through a little laboratory window and be on your way. And I did it.
It's not sexy, right?
It was not sexy. And you know, what was embarrassing about it was like, all those nurses know what you're doing in there. There's no hiding it. And, you know, if I really think about it, they do this work every day. And so it's not a big deal for them. But I'm glad that I did that, because it was enlightening. We had talked about having children in the past. We had both decided that if we got pregnant, it would be amazing. And we would be so stoked to bring a kid into the world. But we weren't actively trying, and we also weren't actively preventing pregnancy either. It hadn't happened for us. We had never gotten pregnant. And what we learned during my first semen analysis was that I have not the greatest quality of sperm.
You probably have better quality now.
The greatest quality yeah. of sperm. The results that I got from that was that I had a normal amount of, like, a sperm count was normal, but the motility, like the way the sperms swim, was very low. Low motility, meaning a low percentage of the sperm were swimming correctly or appropriately.
They might not make it to the egg.
Exactly. And along with that, the morphology of the sperm was a very low percentage as well, meaning not very many of my little swimmers were appropriately shaped. Either the head or the neck or the little tail of the spermie was, you know, for lack of a better word, deformed. And that probably contributed to the low motility, them not swimming correctly. The way the nurse described it to me was, instead of swimming in a straight line for the egg, they're kind of going in circles. Mm-hmm. And so that was telling for me. It was like, oh, wow, Well, I mean, it makes sense that we've never gotten pregnant because we hadn't used protection for many, many years. And also, it was interesting news to receive that I was a great candidate for an IVF process. And we didn't realize that this journey from moving through the breast cancer process was going to take us to this IVF path. And had that not happened, we might not have ever gone down that route.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even rewinding a little bit further to January of 2021, you and I sat with plant medicine, ayahuasca, and we were both shown that we were meant to be parents.
Oh, yeah.
In these ceremonies.
Very strongly.
And it was after these ceremonies that we were like, yes, we are doing it. And that was going to be the next step. And literally 6 months later, I learned about the breast cancer. And so I feel like, you know, we talked with Dr. Conover at one point. He's an amazing functional medicine doctor. And he said, at one point, sooner or later, you are going to find this as the greatest gift, the breast cancer. I'm like, I hadn't gotten there yet.
Neither had I.
And I'm like, I know we've had enough happen in our lives where we can look back and know that there's plenty of miracles that surround us. And I just felt like we were carried so beautifully through that journey and then landed in the right hands with the IVF clinic to be able to get these answers. And you and I would have never sought out IVF.
I really don't think we would have either.
No. And getting back home to Oregon after the surgery, I'm on the phone with the IVF clinic. They inform me that there is a grant for women who go through breast cancer, who are going to be embarking on treatment, that they get one round of egg retrieval.
And paid for, y'all.
Paid for by the government.
Which is a big deal because it's an expensive
process. It's a very expensive process.
The procedures, all the checkups, the lab work, like everything really adds up. And so for a lot of women who are going through breast cancer treatments, this is a really potent option. Like, it's so amazing that that's available.
If you have health insurance, going through the surgeries and procedures with breast cancer, that is all mostly covered. So we were grateful to have health insurance.
Yeah.
But IVF is not covered by health insurance. So right away, I was filling out that paperwork so that we could get this grant. And we show up at the fertility clinic and we're like, when are we going to make embryos? Like, we want to do the egg retrieval, yes, and it's covered. But when do we make the embryos? Do you like freeze the eggs and then make embryos later, right before we start to do the embryo transfer? We had no idea what we were getting ourselves into with the clinic.
And so naive.
We were, because we had put so much work into researching my surgery and doing all of this prep and then recovery. And I'm still recovering. I think I was just finishing up my pain meds. And then we're moving into egg retrieval, which not ideal. You know, we would like to really be cleansed and clear and prepared, but we were just kind of thrown in the washing machine of the healthcare.
Yeah.
And I was about to start a treatment. I was starting that tamoxifen medication.
Yeah. So the idea was to like, let's retrieve your eggs before you start that medication.
Because it can have an effect on your fertility. So we're in the clinic and the woman says, oh, we need to be talking about embryo creation immediately. Because when typically, the way it goes is you do your egg retrieval, and the man, during the time of the egg retrieval, you go in and ejaculate, and then they combine the egg and the sperm right there,
The
embryos are made overnight. So we were so funny. That's unfortunately not covered through the grant, and we still prioritized making embryos because we know that we're each other's partners. We knew that we wanted to make a baby together.
What I remember I believe it was the nurse telling us was that if you want to make embryos, like, we need to do it right away. You don't want to put your eggs on ice and then thaw them later because the viability of those eggs decreases. And there's the potential that it will be unsuccessful, right? And so if you know that you're going to go in this process, knowing that you want to have a child, knowing that you want to have a child with a specific partner, it is more ideal to just create embryos right off the bat. and rather than just doing the egg retrieval, mm-hmm. because the success rate would be higher. And, you know, there's so many different routes of going through this IVF process. For us, we knew that we had to wait later in time before we could actually do an embryo transfer because of the advice or the wisdom of the oncologist based off of statistics of, you know, likelihood of breast cancer recurrence based off of how much time you've spent on this specific medication for this specific type of breast cancer. Again, there's so many different types of breast cancer. And so this process for us going through IVF, we knew it was going to be at least 2 years before we were actually going to go through with an embryo transfer. I imagine there are plenty of women who go through this process with an embryo transfer really quickly.
They do the egg retrieval, embryo creation, and then transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does happen fast. In that same conversation with the nurse and doctor, we were able to ask about genetic testing. And there is a gene that runs in my family that my mother and I both learned about through our breast cancer process. And it's called CHEK2, is the genetic mutation. And it's breast cancer causing, and it can cause other disease as well. But I believe that's kind of a lot of the source between my grandmother, mother, and myself going through this. And when we sat with ayahuasca, you know, I was really thinking that I wanted to change and shift the lineage of my family.
Yeah, and I remember you just really being adamant about different family patterns that you wanted to break. You were ready to break patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely a big focus and something that we had talked about a lot, even leading up to our experience with ayahuasca. Yeah.
It's so wild, fast forwarding, learning that we could genetically test the embryos for this specific genetic mutation and not pass the mutation down to our lineage. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa. I didn't think it would be done so scientifically. I thought it would be more emotional purging and releasing. But I remember us driving back and forth from Eugene to Portland and grieving that we were going through it, grieving that I know that gratitude should really be the forefront of just being grateful to be able to go through that journey. But it was so much grief, so much grief of not being able to make a baby in the way that we thought that we would.
Yeah. You were so tender already in working through the grief of losing your breasts, right? Like there was already so much for you to process. And then next thing we know, we're pumping you full of hormones and getting your organs prepared to just release as many eggs as possible. And that process just, I mean, it brings up a lot.
And I think we were both laughing after the fertility clinic appointment. You know, they send you home with your medications, all these injections, all these needles. And we're like, they are trusting us with this.
I don't remember who you had mentioned that to. There was a friend of ours that you had mentioned that to. And they were like, yeah, just wait until you have a child. And then they send you home with a baby. What?
We have to take care of this thing now. Oh my gosh. So, you know, we have our first initial appointment and the whole egg retrieval process, I kind of added up the amount of days. It's just under 2 weeks, depending on the female body. It's different for everybody because they're monitoring you really closely. And we were doing 2 to 3 injections every day. And it was super supportive for me at the time for you to be giving me my injections. I did not want to be giving myself the injections. And so that was a really supportive thing. It was Nurse Jonah. And it just really felt like you were just so a part of the process, you know, a part of making this future child, a part of creating our embryos. And we would try to make it as romantic as we could. You would give me a kiss right after giving me the injection. And during the egg retrieval process, you're not supposed to have sex because there's a lot of danger.
Like your ovaries
get huge.
Yeah, they're getting so large because they're just like really just like trying to boost up as many eggs as possible to be able to be released at one time, where typically during a woman's cycle, it's 1, maybe 2 eggs would get released during your menses, right? But they're trying to like get as many eggs as possible. And I don't even remember how many eggs you had, viable eggs that you had during that process. But I do remember your ovaries were quite swollen.
Yeah, I think that they had counted over 20 follicles in the beginning.
Yeah, 25 is what comes to mind for me, yeah. But I don't know if that's right.
And it's different for everybody too. And what we didn't realize is we thought that the egg retrieval would be a one and done. And that's rarely the case.
Yeah.
Women sometimes go through multiple rounds of egg retrieval. And we didn't realize that. We're like, oh, we're just going to do egg retrieval. It's going to be great. And so we were driving back and forth to Portland almost every other day, every couple of days for just under 2 weeks. And it was so exhausting. And you were driving, thank goodness. I couldn't imagine going through the process on my own. And I know there's lots of women who retrieve their eggs on their own and go through these journeys on their own. And I was so grateful to have you through the process and just your presence and your masculine energy and your knowledge too. You have this amazing ability to recall and remember information, just like you did, and you understand the female body too.
I'm still learning.
Yeah.
The female body will forever be a bit of a mystery to me. But
I think for everyone.
A delightful mystery.
Yeah. And what's hilarious is we had a yoga retreat booked in Tulum.
Yeah. You were working on that before you had even received the diagnosis for breast cancer. And so we had this, you know, whole plan to go to go to Tulum, bring a bunch of guests and do this retreat experience. And we kind of just like threw that out the window.
We just took it off the website as soon as I learned about the breast cancer.
But we held on to the reservation just in case.
We had a beautiful villa reserved and we're like, maybe we hold on to this because we might want a vacation after the surgery. And so we held on to this reservation and agreed to having some friends and family come along with us. And so I'm asking the fertility clinic, I'm like, how soon can I travel after my egg retrieval? Joan and I have lived very, very fast-paced lives, and we still hadn't broken that pattern at this point. I'm looking back at this journal, and I'm like, gosh, I was doing a lot of stuff every day, staying so busy, and we didn't cancel the reservation, so we kept it, and you don't know, so you take a trigger shot before the egg retrieval. Mm-hmm. It's a high dose of HCG. Mm-hmm. I think once you trigger, then you retrieve 24 hours later, something like
There's
that.
There's a set time. Yeah, I can't remember the specific, but it's like they want you to do the trigger shot at a specific time, like the night before or, you know, whatever time before, but they give you the specific time because they want to take you into your procedure at the scheduled time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's so very specific.
We packed our stuff to Portland. We stayed the night in Portland. We packed our things to go to Mexico. And they had delayed the retrieval because they really want to make sure that all of the follicles are at the right size.
Yeah. Yeah. They have like I think it's like 17 millimeters per egg. Like they want each egg to grow to that size. I remember you had like one monster egg that was like 28 millimeters. And they're like, you know, more than likely that won't be one that would be usable because it's just grown too big. But you had so many follicles and so many eggs growing. And a lot of them were fitting this criteria of how large they should be, but they just wanted a few more.
Yeah. So they pushed it an extra day and we needed to extend our travel because apparently you're not able to fly on a plane within 24 hours of anesthesia. That's the rule.
We did not know that.
So we pushed back our trip and we did our egg retrieval and... By the way, it's a very uncomfortable process. You do feel about 4 months pregnant at that point when right before retrieval. So I was probably this bloated at that point. And your ovaries are huge. I was waddling. You're not supposed to get your heart rate up because you can twist an ovary. So you're taking slow, waddly walks. And there's specific diet recommendations too. So we were following the diet really closely. I know they want you to take a lot of electrolytes before the egg retrieval. And then another thing that I didn't know is having a heat pack for afterward. And that was came in handy, was having some warmth on the belly afterward. But please learn from us and our mistakes and do not plan an international travel immediately following your egg retrieval. Like, do not.
Take the space you need to recover and heal from that experience.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say you had it easy. You didn't, but you weren't really in like a lot of pain afterwards. And there are some women that it's like very painful for them.
Especially afterwards. If they've gone through PCOS and they've had their own endometrial problems.
If I remember correctly, there's the potential for something to happen where your ovaries will fill with fluid afterwards, which is
it's a hyperstimulation.
Hyperstimulation of the ovaries, right? From this procedure, which is excruciatingly painful. Mm-hmm. And you have to go to a specific specialist to be able to actually drain that fluid. It's not like you can just walk into any clinic or any hospital. And so
any random place in Mexico,
traveling to Mexico, like there was a lot of risk in that.
And we live dangerously. So we waited, you know, the 24 hours after anesthesia. And I looked, our flight plan was at like 5 a.m. And we had wheelchair transport at the airport because I could not walk that long distance. So it felt pretty VIP. However, I was still like, what the hell are we doing? Why are we doing this? Like, I should really be home and resting. Don't travel that soon after egg retrieval. Yeah.
Lesson was learned. Although we did have a really great time in Mexico with our friends and some family, and it was lovely, and it was, you know, probably what our spirits needed.
Yeah, it was a wonderful celebration. It took a while for me to finally really slow down. I think that once I learned about the breast cancer, it was almost like, okay, we got to live our lives because you start thinking about life and death at that point.
Yeah.
And so we were really like seizing the moment and living our best lives. And then it continued to after the egg retrieval. And I think that it's important for all of us to do the things that we really want to do and live our best lives. And also, I've gone through a lot of process in the last couple of years since then to really allow myself to set better boundaries with my own self and not say yes to everything, even though I want to. And it all sounds awesome. I think honoring the rest, especially when we're talking about creating life, we really need to create space in our life in order for new life and new creation to come in.
Mm. Yeah. Well, now that you are actually pregnant, it's almost like you don't really get a choice at this point because this little nugget inside of you is like soaking in life force and nutrients and blood, and like just it's taking so much from you that you're not really quite as capable of doing all of the things that you were able to do before. Not capable, that's probably not the right word, but the energy for it is no longer really there because it's being so focused and honed in on growing this little baby, which today is the size of a large onion.
Your favorite food.
I love onions. But it's been really fascinating for me to witness this because you are a busybody. You are so good at keeping yourself busy, which I don't always follow suit with. Like I oftentimes like to go into chill mode or I go on like single track minded topics where your mind focuses on so many different things in such a quick amount of time. And over the years, like you've just been able to run circles around me.
But I burn out fast. I sizzle faster.
You crash hard for sure. But definitely over the course of the last few months, I've been able to run circles around you. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big shift for us. I think you even brought it up a couple of days ago. It was making you sad that I was able to do all of these things that was taking you such a long time to do because your energy just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. We've talked about forced slowdowns in the past and definitely our experience of going through that breast cancer healing journey was one of them. But those old patterns of staying busy remained. Mm-hmm. And now we're just in a new experience, or at least you are in a new experience of kind of a forced slowdown. I think it really just comes down to prioritizing what you want to spend your energy on, because you are very attuned to your body. You've always been very attuned to your body. That's how you found that you had a cancerous tumor in your breast to begin with, because you were just so attuned to what your body feels like. Given that skill, I think you just know now, like, how to prioritize your energy. And it really is like the priority is growing this baby.
Mm. Symptoms of pregnancy mimic symptoms that aren't so great in a normal life. Nausea, headaches, exhaustion. Like, that's not a normal way to feel, except it is normal in pregnancy.
Yeah, for those of you ladies out there that have had pregnancies that were just a breeze, where you just felt amazing the entire time, you are a unicorn because I've gotten to observe Brittany just laid on the couch, moaning and groaning from fatigue and nausea. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really kicking her ass.
Well, and the more I've talked with women, it's challenging. It's a challenging, challenging process. And I think the egg retrievals prepared me for that. And, you know, we decided that we wanted more embryos.
Yeah.
And so I ended up doing a year of tamoxifen, and then we did another round of egg retrieval in April of
2023.
Yeah, March of 2023. I had to write some of these things down because it was just such a journey.
And so cool that you have all of that information written down in your one line a day journal that you've had for the last 10 years. Pretty awesome.
Super cool. And so second round of egg retrieval, I learned that my thyroid was sluggish.
Mm-hmm. Hypothyroidism.
Hypothyroidism. It wasn't too sluggish, but they wanted to put me on a medication for this next round of egg retrieval that we had done. And I actually did some research. They wanted me to go on a certain med, which is really a common one. It's called levothyroxine. And I had reached out to my functional medicine doctor and naturopath. And thank goodness we have these resources to be able to reach out to. But I was suggested to go on to Armour Thyroid. And it's more of a natural form of thyroid support. It actually comes from pig thyroid. Mm-hmm. And my fertility doctor was on board with it. So I ended up starting Armour Thyroid, which I'm still taking to this day. Because once your thyroid gets a little sluggish, it needs a little bit of support. And so leading into us finally getting to do our embryo transfer, well, I guess we should continue to highlight this, the second round of egg retrieval. We had wanted one more embryo.
Yeah.
That didn't have the gene, and we got one.
Just what we asked for.
Right? Can we high foot here, high foot. So that was a huge celebration, and also we went about that. It's in such a better way. We cleared our calendars.
Yeah.
We offered ourselves space.
We prioritized it.
And we just knew what to expect. So the second round, I would say, was a lot easier because I offered myself a lot more rest, a lot more space. As I'm looking through my one line a day journal, the one thing that I kept up with regularly was acupuncture. And I feel like acupuncture is super important and vital for fertility and for that whole journey. I received Reiki and energy work, and that was really, really wonderful and supportive. I also had been listening to a lot of sound healing meditations and sat in on sound healing, and I felt like the sound healing was really beautiful for that process. Was there anything else that you felt like was really supportive other than spaciousness?
Yeah, I think we just were like, we didn't have plans. We were at home. We were cooking our meals. We were just like focused.
Mm-hmm.
from what I remember of that time, like in comparison to the first one, there wasn't this, it wasn't like we had come out of something really big and hit the ground running and moving right into this. Like we were planning for it and giving ourselves the space and the time and doing these supportive and nourishing activities so that everything could go as smoothly as possible.
Right.
And it really did.
And then we'll fast forward to this year. So in 2024, we knew that we wanted to do an embryo transfer in June. And that was the plan. That was kind of a plan that I had discussed with the oncologist of when I would go off the tamoxifen. They want you off of it for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Let it clear from your system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A year ago, well, actually, it's been 2 years coming up in December. So I stopped drinking alcohol. And that was a huge piece to a promise that I wanted to give our future child of the safety that I wanted to create for the child of what it was coming into, a safe home and a safe body. Went through a lot of emotional challenge through that of just, you know, I wasn't numbing anymore and we weren't having our party weekends anymore. Yeah. We were still having plenty of fun, but alcohol just wasn't a part of it. And you and I just really started cleaning that part of our lives out.
You were very motivated for that piece of just letting that go. And you'd worked with a coach and there was a lot of processing and a lot of just like breaking of that pattern brought up like, well, who am I in this space? If I'm not drinking with all of these people drinking, am I the boring friend now? Like there was just a lot that came up with that because it's so normalized to drink alcohol in our culture. It made me just analyze what my relationship was with alcohol and with many different substances in my life. And really when you stopped drinking alcohol, I also decided I was going to stop consuming cannabis. Not that I had this regular habit of smoking or consuming cannabis, but it was still there. It was still a
part of our life.
It was still a part of my habits or my behaviors. And letting that go was really interesting. Also, like just looking at what my relationship is to these different substances and how have I used these in the past? Like, where did they benefit me? And where were they not beneficial? Mm-hmm. Like in what ways? And just getting to look at those things was enlightening for me. Being able to have you as kind of this shining light through the process, I got to witness just the discomfort that it brought up in you. And it was encouraging for me to be able to release some of those patterns and behaviors as well.
I wanted to create this safe environment. There was times that I remember when I was little growing up and there would be parties happening and it just would really make me so angry that, well, first I was missing out as a child, but also it just doesn't feel good to be around.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to create this safer environment. And in addition, I had hired a coach through, it's called Prime Revival. And this was just in this last year, but I was tracking my macros and working out and lifting weights and just really being super serious about being strong and also, you know, tracking my food. And I started eating more food than I ever have in my life.
Yeah.
Because you have to eat a lot more food when you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of constantly eating, especially in the first trimester, trying to have like small snacks so that it keeps the nausea down. Mm-hmm. So getting into that habit was huge. Mm-hmm. And just really focusing all around health created this space in my body to have this wonderful temple that was ready for an embryo.
It's so funny when you say that, I just think back to you and having like a high standard for yourself and for your life. You're just like, you're all in. When you decide on something, you go all in. That's like why the podcast is so great, because you go all in. But it was like this game that you were just like striving for the achievement of like meeting your macro goals. And I would just laugh. I'm like, you are killing it.
Well, you had already been tracking your macros. And then I come in and I'm like, I have to be within 4 grams of protein.
Yeah, if you're a little under or a little over, it's not a big deal.
Like, I'm like, no, it is.
It balances out over
time. It needs to be perfect. It's been just really worth it increasing my food intake, increasing my protein, having these written workouts for myself.
Well, and with that, around this same time, you know, after you had started working with Coach Avery is when we decided to work with Kyle Kingsbury.
Yes.
Doing his Physically Fit program through Fit for Service. And that was really big for both of us because there was a lot for us to learn. And he's such a wealth of knowledge. You guys have heard him, seen him on the podcast. He's got so much to share. And he's just like, he's the optimization dude. He knows what's up.
He does.
And through that process and that work with Kyle, like I had learned about some of the gut health issues that I've got. I had this H. pylori overgrowth. Also through working with my fitness coach, Paul, who, you know, hooked me up with somebody to do like a GI map testing where you have to literally dig through
You got to poop in a little thing.
Yeah, and you have to collect a sample of it. It's not fun, but it is telling. Mm-hmm. And I had already been working on treating this H. pylori issue that I was dealing with, which for me was non-symptomatic. I wasn't really experiencing any stomach pain or I had never had ulcers, nothing crazy like that. But it was like definitely something that I was like, okay, well, if this is an overgrowth, I'd like to treat it. I want to be in optimal health too, because we're planning on bringing a baby into the world and I want longevity. I want to be able to care for this kid for the next 20 years at least.
Well, and you can often share these bacteria. Mm-hmm. So if one person has H. pylori in the relationship, the other person is likely to have it. And I had done my own research and I'm like, hey, I need to get one of these tests.
Yeah.
So I had also tested and came back with some dysbiosis in the gut and H. pylori and SIBO. So Kyle actually got us in touch with Dr. Nathan Riley, mm-hmm. who's a holistic OBGYN. And I had been having these test results. I also did a Dutch test, which is a very detailed hormonal test. And Dr. Nathan Riley is the first doctor that I have ever had that had me go and take a blood test at a certain point in my cycle.
Yeah, like he wanted you to do it at a certain time in like a specific phase of your cycle.
Certain phase. He said, I want you to do it. Let's just be for an example, like I want you to do it on day 21 and I want you to do it on day 5. And so then he's looking at the different levels of where we're at in our cycle. And for a female, that's so important because we are cyclical beings and the numbers change. Same thing with the thyroid. You can look at your thyroid values and it depends on the time of day. It depends on where you're at in your cycle. Like you cannot make all of these conclusions based on one test result where you don't know where the woman was in her cycle. Mm-hmm. And so I was so grateful to him. He started doing some labs on me and then I started doing a gut protocol. It was a little devastating because we had had our mindset on June for our embryo transfer, but the gut protocol takes about a month and you cannot be doing a gut protocol and taking these supplements at the same time as an embryo transfer and getting pregnant because pregnancy is a contraindication. Everything is contraindicated with pregnancy and you have to be very cautious of what you're eating and what you're taking in. It's pretty tiring because everything has this warning on the label about if you're pregnant, consult with your doctor.
Yeah.
And so being a 5-star student and a 5-star healer and perfectionist, I was taking, you know, every supplement under the sun that I was being told to and suggested to. Mm-hmm. And you can actually over-supplement your gut and it can actually cause SIBO. And that was something I learned from Dr. Nathan Riley is you can be over-supplementing. So it's really important to not just be getting all of these suggestions and deciding to take them all and not actually seeing what your blood values are and what your levels are at. And so from doing the lab work, Dr. Nathan Riley took me off of a ton of supplements.
Yeah.
And there were certain supplements that I was taking that were contraindicated and things that I was way overdoing. Yeah. And so we spend so much money as a culture on supplements.
Totally.
And it's an unregulated business. So you could just be taking anything. So it's important to learn the different trusted companies. Do not just get on Amazon and buy whatever supplement you're, if you're looking for vitamin C, you need to actually do a little bit of research on what's really quality. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm pregnant, I'm actually only taking a prenatal, taking DHA with omegas. I have been approved to take magnesium and a digestive enzyme. And I do take some melatonin for better quality sleep, a really low dose. But less is more. And especially because Kyle, he had gotten us on eating smoked oysters, canned smoked oysters, which is really high in zinc, right? And other things, but great for fertility. Do you remember? He also had us on organ meats. So what was I making? I was making like breakfast sausage.
Yeah, we would get beef liverwurst and mix that with some ground beef. And you were making these really yummy breakfast sausages that we would have with breakfast every day with some eggs.
You know, liver and different organs are really beneficial for fertility. Mm-hmm. The smoked oysters, really beneficial. And if you are getting some high nutrients in your diet, you're not needing to be supplementing as much.
Yeah. What's interesting about the supplementation is every body is so different, right? And every body processes things differently. And it's so easy to just hear like blanket statements of what we should be taking. And there's so many like fitness influencers and so much information that's out there, too much information for our beautiful minds to be consuming, if you ask me. But with so much that we see, it's like, oh, I should try this. Oh, this greens powder, I should be taking that. Oh, these, you know, liposomal vitamins, I should be taking that. Like there's all of these different things that we are being fed in terms of what we're being told we should be consuming.
When really we just need to sleep better. Sleep
and
more.
And eat high quality foods.
And get off the alcohol.
Which isn't always available to everyone either. Like some people aren't, it's not accessible for them to have the most high quality foods. And yet it really can make all of the difference.
And you might just be tired because you're exhausting yourself and not allowing yourself enough sleep. Mm-hmm.
There's so much that we have the privilege of getting to learn about ourselves from working with the different doctors that we have. And, you know, for you to be able to get specific lab work from Dr. Nathan Riley, get a really clear snapshot of what your body might be in need of is like priceless, you know?
Yeah. One thing that has been the case for me for a while is my cortisol has been really high and taxed. So the stress hormones, we've gone through a lot of stress. And if I can just list off all of the different stressors I've experienced in my entire life, it's a long list. And then you add on top over caffeinating, over working out, over exercising, travel. Travel is really hard on the body. Mm-hmm. Eating out, there's just a long list of different things of us just living our lives that are really wearing on us.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Riley's like, okay, you need to work out less. He's like, drop down to 2 to 3 days a week and not getting your heart rate super high, not getting your heart rate up. I want you walking. I want you practicing yoga. I want you doing all of the yin and inward practices. And so I focused on that for a couple of months leading up to the embryo transfer as well. Mm-hmm. And especially that month of doing the gut reset was, okay, I'm just going to sleep and not set an alarm. I'm going to be going to bed early. Just really great sleep hygiene, doing my yoga, doing all of the inward practices so that my system could reset. I think that that was a huge part of our success of the embryo transfer.
Yeah. Thank goodness. You know, there's a lot of women and couples out there that don't get to have a successful transfer.
Yeah.
And it's such a taxing process. It's so taxing for a woman to go through because it is just messing with your hormone system so much There's so much discomfort in it, having to take all of those shots. It's just, it's intense. And that's like all of the physical aspect of it. There's also this whole emotional side to it where you have so much hope and you have such desire. I'm so grateful that we get to go through this experience and have had success through the IVF process, and our pregnancy has been all healthy and beautiful and perfect. And I couldn't be happier that we've made it to this point, because the outcome is to have a family, to have children. And I just want to be an old grandpa with you one day. And this is what we've had to do to get there. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for this process. I'm so grateful for our coaches and our doctors and everyone involved in the process, our families for being so excited and supportive. It's just been so beautiful to get to this point. Mm-hmm. And who knew that it all kind of came from this breast cancer journey? Like, who would have ever thought that breast cancer would have led us to starting a family? I never would have, certainly. Mm-mm. But here we are.
It's so funny because, like I was saying earlier, symptoms are a positive thing in pregnancy. So if you're nauseous, if you're vomiting, it's positive. It means it's a strong pregnancy.
Yeah.
And so
it's working.
Your family, they were just cheering that I was not feeling well.
That's what I'm giggling at. I just remember my sister being like, "I'm so happy you feel like crap."
Like, you're so rude. And honestly, I couldn't enjoy it. I was just really having a hard time. I wasn't able to cook a meal. I had a horrible food aversion, was definitely not able to look at any organ meat or eat any meat or eggs.
Yeah, you definitely didn't want to eat smoked oysters, you know, first trimester.
The words of wisdom are start stocking up on your food now and getting all of those nutrients in, because that first trimester, you might not be able to do all that much. Now that the second trimester has hit, we are 17 weeks today. The nausea has been replaced with like intermittent headaches. And so, you know, about once a week, the last few weeks, I've just been like laid out with a headache. And you've shown up for me and made me food and brought me an ice pack and
give me little scalp rubs.
Yeah, rubbing my neck. Rubs just feel so good. All like the tactile stuff right now.
Yeah.
I just had tears streaming down my face today with just the most gratitude for being able to go through the process, to be able to feel the love between the two of us, because I feel like it's really deepened our love and our union, and how you have shown up for me in such a wonderful way and loved me. And the excitement that you have had has really kept me going, because it's hard to feel excited when you feel like shit. I think with this whole process, I almost haven't wanted to get my hopes up, because it's been something that I wanted so bad, but never wanted to admit it and didn't want to get my hopes up, because, you know, there's a chance that it wouldn't have worked. And every appointment you go to, there's all these different risks and all these warnings and all the warnings on the labels. And all these people telling you what you can and can't do. And I finally felt like really awesome today about it.
Well, it was several weeks ago that I believe it was our fertility doctor told us that we have reached the point where there was like a less than 1% chance of miscarriage. And from that moment on, I've just been like, yes, like we made it. And now it's just a means of treating your body right. And for me, just doing whatever I can to support you and nourish you, because I know my little baby is just stealing as much of it as it can from you. And I'm so happy to hear that today is the day that you feel that excitement.
even though there's been struggles even this week of symptoms and discomfort. But I know that the discomfort is going to continue.
Sure.
And we've got to get through a birth together and actually get the baby out and into the world. And that's its own process. So to be continued.
Yeah. I mean, we still got a ways to go. Like you've got 5 more months of this and it's just going to progress and change in so many different beautiful ways and ways that neither of us understand, because I will never be able to go through something like this, but you're experiencing it for the first time. And so it's really special to attune yourself to these changes, endure the discomfort that comes with this, because what is on the other side of this whole process is so worth it. I just know it's going to be so worth it.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see you like in your 8th and 9th month with just a, our babies just in there kicking and punching and rolling around. And I'm just, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm actually, I don't know how much I'm looking forward to that, but but we're going to get through it. And we've been through so much together. And I just want to hear, you know, we've been asking everybody these questions at the end of our podcast of what words of wisdom would you give yourself when you were going through your greatest hardship?
Mm. We've been through so many together, it feels like, and I can't really put a label on one specific one that I think is, that's my greatest hardship. But from what I've learned through a lot of the challenges that we've gone through together and through all of the growth and self-work and evolution that I've gone through, to me, my greatest piece of advice that I would give myself is to just really feel it and not hide from it or run from it or numb myself from it or mask it. Like really allow myself to feel all of the emotions that are with me, within me, during my challenges, because historically I have not done that. And it has always led to my negative or really intense emotions to perpetuate and oftentimes transform into something even worse. So my advice for myself is to really feel my feelings.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And what about you, Brittany?
What's coming to me now, what I've said in the past is slow down, and I still carry that with me, and rest. Rest is what has, when I was asking myself this earlier today, it's rest. Mm-hmm. Cancel the plans. Whatever is not needed, take it off of the calendar. Do not do anything extra. And we just really need to sometimes get in the fucking bath and get quiet. Mm-hmm. Getting quiet, resting, whether that's turning out all the lights and laying on the couch for a minute, going inward for a meditation, allowing the body to sleep, calling in for support from our loved ones. I was just looking back to during our process, excuse me, and we had so many friends have us over for dinner, make us food. And that's like one of the greatest gifts that you can give someone is offering them a meal when they are really going through it. Mm-hmm. But rest is like, overall, we don't need to be hustling. Mm-hmm. Cancel the travel plans. Don't go to Mexico right after. Yeah. But thank you all for being here with us.
Yeah.
And thank you to my beloved husband for being on this journey. And I love you so much. And I love our little baby so much.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love you too. And thank you for an awesome season of not just this podcast, but of life. It's been a really cool season to be a part of. It's been challenging in so many different ways and has been the catalyst for so much growth for me. And I am very thankful for that. So,
yeah. I love you.
I love you too.
And we love you, dear hearts. Take care.
Thank you for joining us today on the BeZen Wellness Podcast. We hope this episode leaves you feeling inspired to continue on your personal quest.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. And if you want to learn more or dive deeper into these topics, visit our website and follow us on social media.
Until then, friends, breathe deep, take some time for yourself, and remember, you are already whole.
Goodbye, dear hearts.